10.
Thank you. My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Russell.
Can you all hear me? Okay. Good to be here. Thank you. Well, this is, if you're keeping count, this is supposed to be step 10. We'll see how that goes. I plan on actually talking a little bit about the step. We'll get into that. I want to do a little recap. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, and I'm grateful for that. And
nice.
Thank you.
Nice.
But what does step 10 continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong promptly? I've been married for 33 years. Nobody knows how to admit they're wrong more than me. I've got a wife. I've got three daughters. They're like 28, 32, and 36, and my wife has, like, cloned herself, you know, with these three gals. And all I just wake up in the morning and I turn to my wife and say, hi, honey, I was wrong. I was wrong, and if I wasn't wrong, I'm going to be wrong, and I know I'm going to be wrong sometime today. So you got about three wrongs there, and just put them in the bank, and I admit I'm guilty, you know. And we go, let's forget the trial. I plead guilty as charged. That's the deal. So my sponsor once asked me, would you rather be right or happy, you know, early on, and I said, well, I want to be both, you know, and, right? Alcoholics want them both. They want the right and happy deal, and that's part of that old thinking, old ideas. Got a lot of old ideas. I'm going to sort of mix it up a little bit. I'm going to, you know, one of the things that happens as you grow older in this deal and you go through the process of the meat grinder, which we call life, and you also practice these, there's nothing, it's nice to read it in the book, but there's nothing like practicing these steps in your life while the check is bouncing and while you're fired and while the crap is going on. That's when you find out what the real deal is. And after around 15, 20, 30 years, you start sort of connecting dots and seeing stuff that, you know, wasn't apparent before. And so I'm going to try to share with you guys about what this sort of thing means to me today and how I see this thing today. And I think actually the older I get, the simpler it gets. It just gets simpler for me. It used to be sort of complicated, and it's just a real simple thing. And I'm going to talk a lot about God and the third step. And I have this rap, I guess there's this rap on me that I don't really do the steps. I do 12 sessions of third step meetings, you know, and that's probably true because I see the third step and God interwoven throughout the entire thing. And to me, that's what the whole thing's about. It's about a relationship with God and faith in God. And I'm not going to put you through the torture of every reference in the book where it says, see to what your relationship with Him is right and great events will come the past few and countless others. There is one who has all power. That one is God. No person can help you. You can't manage your life. Seek Him, and that's the story. Or we never apologize for God. You know, all the references to God and the relationship with God, let no man say job or no job, wife or no wife. You know, just trust God and clean house. You know, you don't have to have your family back. All you need is God and your relationship with God. I want to go through the 3,000 references in the big book from first to last where they talk about God, and I will read a few things about that, but the truth of the matter is the longer I'm sober, the more I see the absolutely essential necessity, how essential it is to have a relationship with God in order to properly work these steps, in order to get this thing accomplished. And whenever anybody slips or slides in this thing, I'm absolutely, or when they even stay sober, but they're living a life of quiet desperation and they're miserable, it's always because of a spiritual dis-ease, because of a problem with a relationship with God or a failure to have a relationship with God. Try to treat this as a psychological problem. Now, that's my opinion. I happen to believe it jives with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but you know something? We all have our lives. We're all doing our thing, and you experiment whichever way you want to experiment and do your own thing, and you can join the atheist group, and you can do whatever you want to do. I'm not putting anybody. You just do your thing, and you figure it out. And this is the way it's worked for me, and this is what I see. So to me, it's so obvious. To me, it's so obvious because it's working in my life, you know. So I just want to talk about a few things having to do with that deal, which is, and I'm sort of going to sort of breeze a little bit on the sixth step, seventh step, third step, mix it all together, and then talk a little bit about tenth step. You know, when I was, so I told him I wanted to have both. You know, I wanted to be right and happy. And one of the problems is after you get sober, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about you, after you get, you know, we come in here thinking, how many people came in here because they couldn't stop drinking? Okay, well, pretty much, okay. Yeah, and so nobody's drinking today, but you're still going to this deal, right? Okay, so, yeah, I came here because I wanted to stop drinking. So how many, so you drank, what, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years? You know, you had to be pounded and pounded and pounded and pounded. I mean, 1 month before you came here, somebody said you had a drinking problem. You said you're full of crap, you know, leave away, you know. And then all of a sudden it dawned upon you after 15 broken marriages and your self-esteem down the window and whatever the heck you had to go through to ruin your life. And you know, like you're supposed to be brilliant, but you have no clue. Everybody else has a clue. So at some point in time you said, I think I have a problem. You went to Alcoholics Anonymous. Is that sort of like the way it went? And you didn't come here because you wanted to come here. This wasn't the number one thing. You came here because you were desperate and you had no choice or something like that. And you came here and you picked up a big, and then you admitted you were powerless over alcohol. Your life was unmanageable. And so you stopped drinking. So you all stopped drinking. Some guys have like 60 days. Some guys have 90 days. Some guys have 10 years. And somewhere along the line, you realize that you're, besides the alcohol thing, you're sort of nuts. You understand? You're crazy. You realize you're crazy, you know? You go to rooms, people talk, and they're crazy, and you say, that guy's crazy, like me, you know what I mean? And so you don't feel so bad because you're crazy, but everybody else is crazy in the room, and they're crazy just like you. And they're crazy in a way like you can't talk about you're crazy out there because they're not crazy out there like we're crazy in here. And so even though you're crazy, you feel kind of good because it's like being a member of a crazy club. You're not alone, you know what I mean? And it's pretty neat. And somewhere along the line, you may, you know, after 5, 10, 15 years, and then you read somewhere in the book where it says, the alcohol, get this, the alcohol, the thing that got you in here is but a symptom of the disease. It ain't even the disease. It ain't even the disease. It's a symptom of the disease. It's like if you sneeze, they say, oh, that's a symptom. Yeah, I think he's got a cold, but it ain't the cold. The sneeze ain't the cold. It's just when you have a cold, you sneeze. It's just a symptom of the disease. You know, or you have a fever or something like that. You know, drinking alcohol is just what alcoholics use in order to assuage the alcoholism. And we don't even know what alcoholism is. We think it has something to do with drinking because all the alcoholics we know are drunk. And then we come in here and there's nobody drunk and they all have alcoholism. They say, my name's so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic. And what's that all about? And then the book says our real disease centers in our mind, not our body. He says we're restless, we're irritable, we're discontented, unless we can again experience such ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So the thing we have in common is we're all crazy, and the only thing that has ever helped us and worked for us is booze. And that's it. But the booze is not the problem. The booze is actually, for us, the solution. That's why we don't want to give it up. Because if we give up the booze, then we're nuts, and it's painful, and life is horrible, so we don't want to give up the booze, because the booze is the only thing that works for us. Right? That's right. The deal. So, but finally, you got to give up the booze, because it works for you, it works for you, it works for you, it works for you, or at least you think it works for you. And then at some point in time, it doesn't work for you anymore. As a matter of fact, you know, you drink because you're depressed, and then you start drinking, and all of a sudden you're getting more depressed. It makes you more depressed, you know? And so you give up the booze, and you come in here, and somewhere along the way, you realize that you're crazy anyway, you know? And then somewhere along the way, as you're sort of reading this stuff, you read something in the book where it says, something to the effect, something like this. We have to give up our old ideas, or the result was nil until we let go out. You know, you got to get rid of your old, whatever. What do you think that means? Old ideas. What does that mean? And, you know, we sort of say it, we talk about it, old ideas, but, you know, we don't really sort of understand what it is until all of a sudden we start being confronted by life and life's problems. And we don't understand what the problem is. Some of us get inklings of the old ideas are. Well, right off the bat, one of the old ideas that everybody is told about and pretty much accepts, I think, for the most part, or else they're sort of miserable and drink again, is the idea that resentment is the number one offender. Right? You know, isn't that one of the old, now if you're like me, I'm a hateaholic. I am like a hateaholic. Now, alcoholics are delusional. It says we're selfish, we're self-centered, in 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. I'm delusional. Let's forget about the dishonesty thing. It's not so much that I'm dishonest. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a liar. I am a liar. I'm an excusable. I lie. I make excuses. I'm a hypocrite. I say one thing. I do another thing. I'm a prostitute as far as my values are concerned. I am like the worst type of person you could possibly imagine. And if you look at me, and there's no question if you're an alcoholic, you're a liar. As a matter of fact, if you say you're not a liar, you're lying about that. You know what I mean? I'm a liar. I'm a hypocrite. I've given every excuse. You know, people call me and I give them an excuse. You know, I don't answer the phone. I'm the guy who looks at the caller ID and I say, I ain't answering that. You know, I hide out. I'm a hider. I'm a liar. I'm an avoider of work. I screw people over and then I lie about why I didn't. I blame somebody else. I am like a total liar. And I do it with sincerity. Sometimes I lie and I think I'm telling the truth. It's like I'm living in an alternate universe, you know what I mean? It's like I'm living in Hawaii and I think I'm living in Alaska. I mean, it's like because the alcoholic life seems the only normal one. So it all seems normal. I'm a liar. And then you ask me, you got to be honest, and this is what an alcoholic says when you say, he says, I'm honest. Every alcoholic that comes in here, if you ask him whether he's honest, he'll say he's honest. Say, now, the one thing about me is I always tell the truth, you know? Now, I may be an alcoholic, and I may be but I can tell you one thing. I always tell the truth.
Yeah, right.
I never lie.
Yeah.
And they look at you, and they say that with a straight frickin' face, you know what I mean? And if you challenge them on it, you know what they do? They fire you, and they get another sponsor. They get mad. They get mad because they're concerned. How can you call me a liar, you know? And because they're nuts. But this is a very serious disease. So the first old idea we sort of find out about is the resentment thing. And I'm a hater. Here's the thing. I'm a hater. You see, I walk in here, I can't tell you. Now, here's the problem. I think I'm a nice guy. I am a nice guy. I'm a great guy. Then why, and it doesn't really, I don't really get the fact that I walk around planet Earth just hating people. Hating people. Now, this is probably not you. I'm just talking about me. I mean, it's horrible to admit this, but I can't tell you before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and for many years after I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, how easy it is for me to hate people. I mean, I'm talking hate. I'm talking about picturing people dying, you know, on the road. Picture blowing up people. Picture people. I mean, I can't. My favorite place to hate people is in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when they're talking. You know, that guy's talking too long, you know what I mean? Somebody ought to do something. I mean, I can develop a resentment in AA rooms that you can't even imagine. I don't need to be out here. All I have to do is be in here and I can develop a resentment. Now, I don't even think of it as hating somebody because all I do is think badly about myself and other people. I don't think about it because my alcoholic life seems the only... Listen, you know what it is? It's just the way I think. It's just the way I think. I sit in bars with my buddies and I talk bad shit about myself and other people. And I don't even think that's like an old, that's all about old ideas. Now, in the book, it says, all of a sudden it says something like, resentment is the number one offender. It kills more alcoholics. Now, let me ask something. Why do you think, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the first major things it says as far as old ideas is resentment or hatred, which is really hatred, resenting somebody, hating somebody. Why do you think one of the first things they say, it's the number one reason, why do you think it's one of the first things we got to get rid of? Because we're all haters. You don't understand that. Why would they put it in there? Why is it the one thing they got to beat it out of us real fast to see, for us to recognize and resent people and get rid of the resentment? If it wasn't only the number one thing, but that we all had it in common. You know? But we don't think of us that way. We think we're just great people and we just love everybody. So why do they have it in the book? I mean, you see, the problem with this disease is it masquerades itself. The problem with the disease is we got all sorts of crazy... Here's the deal. Let's say you got 100 forms of fear. 100 forms. That's what it says, 100 forms. Let's say you got all sorts of problems going on inside of you, like the book says. Old ideas, whatever. 100 old ideas, 200 old ideas. They're all going to lead you down. Here's the problem. We don't see them. We don't see it. To us, that's just our personality. You know, to us, it feels comfortable. To us, it's with the stuff that's killing us, the stuff that's toxic is actually killing us. And so what happens is here's the deal. I come in here. Well, let me back up. So my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan, I'll give you a little story, says to me, I've shared some of these things before. It was all going to hopefully blend in like Pulp Fiction after a while. My first sponsor says, I bring my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan, I'm a lawyer. I got all sorts of degrees, you know, post, you know, unbelievable, you know, National Science Foundation fellow, Department of the Laws of Mathematics. I bring them to my office. My sponsor, first sponsor, he's like that 20 years, never even graduated, I think, grade school. He's a used car salesman from Chicago. You know, it's not my fault. I was poorly under-sponsored. You know, Albert Einstein was apparently busy or something. I don't know. So he stuck me with this guy. I was vulnerable. You know, when I came to AA, I had like two neurons working. They were waving goodbye to each other. I couldn't even talk. So they stuck me with this guy. So I had this guy. I bring him into my office. I got an office with this big wall, and the wall has nothing but degrees on it. Diplomas, degrees, certificates, all sorts of stuff. You know, to prove that I've been educated far beyond my capacity to understand anything. They're all over there, okay? So I say to my first sponsor, Bob, I say, Bob, those are, and you've heard this before, but I say, those are my degrees. And he says to me this, he says, well, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees, you know what they do with those. And like you, I'm like a sensitive guy. You know, I told him, I said, I'm sensitive, you know, that's like hurt. What about this love and tolerance is our code shit, you know? I said, I'm a sensitive guy. He says, no, Russ, great artists are sensitive. You're just touching, you know? So now I'm riding in the car. I'm 3 or 4 years sober, and I'm riding in the car with Ray O'Keefe, you know, who's a circus leader, great guy, one of my mentors. And I was going through yet again another situation where I was low on funds because I'm like one of these guys, I've never been able to manage money. I mean, I bought more things I don't need with money I don't have to impress people I don't like to sort of puff myself up and make myself a big man thinking I need stuff where I don't need stuff because on my own I'm a piece of crap, so I got to add this or do that or whatever it is. And, you know, when listen, you know what I learned at 9 years sobriety? This is amazing. I'm going to teach you guys. You may not have, if you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. Did you ever? I didn't know that. You know? Did you know that? I didn't know that. So, because I was always in debt, I was always making good money. How can you always make a lot of money and always be broke? You know, I don't know how that happens. How do you make money and always be broke? It has something to do with spending the money. I don't get it. I don't understand. It's too complex for me, even with all those degrees. So I'm talking to Ray O'Keefe, and I said to him, I said, when am I going to have? Because I was interested in this. When am I going to have financial security? You know, because everybody's interested in that. But I mean, if you do A real good, the bottom line is you should be wealthy, a multimillionaire, a billionaire, something like that, because you're special and everything. So when am I going to have financial security? Now, I understand I'm talking to a group of you guys who probably never worry about this stuff. But I was always, I had a wife and kids and everything. I was always, you know, I couldn't pay the rent. I couldn't pay the mortgage. I was behind on this, behind on that, you know. And you know, it causes you to suck your thumb a lot and worry about stuff and everything and lose sleep. So I say, when am I going to have financial security? And he looks at me and he says, you? He says, what do you mean financial? He says, you're not going to have financial security. He says, no, I'm serious, right? I've got 3 or 4 years. I've been working this thing real hard. You know, I've done the integral banquet. I've done service. I said, when am I going to be financially secure? He said, yeah, you're never going to be. No, you're not going to get financial. He says, no, one of the promises is I get financial security. Says, it doesn't say that, Russell. He says, yes, it does. It says financial security. He says, look it up. And he's reading to me. So I opened up the book. He read it. He says, I said, fear of people and financial insecurity will leave us. And he says, you see? He says, you don't get financial, you lose the fear. He says, Spats, he says, let me tell you something. You'll always be broke. But it just won't bother you. You know? And I think, he's like hurting my, and then I'm like 9 years sober. Now we're 9 years sober, okay? And I'm with my sponsor, Joe Snyder. You know, my first sponsor died, and once again, I was pissed off of that. So, you ever go to discussion meetings? Anybody ever go to discussion meetings here? Yeah, and what a discussion means, like they're saying, some guy says something like this, you wouldn't believe what, I had the worst day, you wouldn't believe, I'm having the worst week, you wouldn't believe what happened, my, then fill in the blank, brother, cousin, father, boss, mother, you know, IRS, just fill in the blank. There's a stadium full of people. There's a world of people. And what happens is, it's the same story, they just sort of like keep on rotating the names. My mother, my brother, my sister, my cousin, what is it? And you know, that's what it is. You know, that's what this guy is. So once again, I was 9 years sober, and I'm talking to my sponsor. So what do you tell your sponsor? You tell your sponsor, you know, the crap that's happening to you, and it's not your fault, I'm not to blame. And I said, my this, my that, you know, whatever it is, and my sponsor, I just picked bad sponsors. You know, just like my first sponsor didn't appreciate me, and O'Keefe didn't appreciate me, and I said, I'm whining, and he says, why don't you just go drink already? Why don't you go drink? I don't want to hear it. He says, and I looked at him, and I said, you know, because what are you going to say? I said, well, do you ever get resentments? And he said, get them, I give them. And I couldn't handle it. I didn't even understand what he was talking. I couldn't even imagine that, because I'm the kind of guy, if you're an alcoholic like me, you know, and I didn't realize this was one of my old ideas, I'm a please love me a holic, don't reject me a holic, how can I prostitute myself so that you'll accept me a holic, you know, I mean, what do I have to do so that you won't talk to me about me behind my back a holic? I'm like every type of, you know, I'm worrying about what they're thinking about me, how do I look and everything like that. I can't even imagine that there's a critter on the planet Earth that could have somebody not like them, and it wouldn't bother the crap out of them, because it would bother the crap out of me. I mean, you want to kill me, just come up to me and say something like this. You wouldn't believe what they were saying about you at the KISS group the other day after you walked out the door. Oh, my God, give me a gun. Let me blow my brains out. You know, a bunch of alcoholics talking bad about me. I might as well kill myself, you know? I mean, really, it's unbelievable. You know, and when these guys were saying that kind of stuff to me, and that's the way they said it to me, I don't know how your sponsor talks to you, I was noticing a pattern. I noticed a pattern. These guys apparently were insensitive to my feelings. They were insensitive to me. Well, you don't know what it's like, Steve, you know what I mean? They were insensitive to my feelings, and I had feelings, you know, and I'm an alcoholic, like you have feelings, you understand. You know, and I'm sensitive to your feelings, but I, you know, they were sensitive to my feelings. Apparently, they didn't give a crap about my feelings. They cared about my character. They cared about character. And apparently, there's some sort of relation between humiliation and developing humility and growing character, which probably has something to do with the sixth or seventh step, where it says, this is the way we get a new perspective by 100 forms of humiliation, the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. So apparently, somehow along the way, what these steps do is they crunch you down and they beat you down along with, by the way, life, okay, in such a way so that if you work them, you develop some form of humility and somehow learn some sort of lesson having to do with character building, which is apparently really much more important than humility. I mean, much more important than your feelings. And one of the things that happens when you get into that thing they're talking about, the fellowship of the spirit, you know, the six steps, the separation from the men and the boys. What I noticed in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I noticed there was something else going on, there were people, everybody was sober, but there were people that were sober that sort of stood out. You know what I'm talking about? Because we do have leaders in here. It says in the tradition, it says we got leaders. Because our leaders are trusted servants. As a matter of fact, you can tell the leaders because they're the servants. They're the ones that serve. They're the ones that go around. They're not whining. They're not crying. You know what you see them doing? You always see them helping out people. You always see them, they're like this, they're helping. And one of the things that you notice is the boys and the girls are always whining and talking about their feelings. Boy, alcoholics hate that, you know, when you put down that crap. They have, you know, because I know you have a right to feel the way you feel, you know, and that your feelings are more important than anything else. And your feelings are the most important thing in the world, and who the hell do I think, you know, not telling your feelings? You know, you want to talk about your inner child and all that shit and all that crap, and you don't even notice that you're 40 years old and you're not grown up anymore and you're like a six-year-old. You don't even, it's hard to notice that you're hanging around with other six-year-olds who are 40 and 50 years old talking the same shit you're talking about, and wondering why you're always a thumbs-up, sucking crybaby, and nothing ever works for you. No relationship ever works, no love affair ever works, no romance ever works, because who wants to be married to a two-year-old? You know what I mean? It just never works. And you don't think it's your fault because you think it's perfectly okay. But then again, you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and all of a sudden you start running into people, they're few and far between, that apparently either don't have feelings or don't have problems or whatever it is, because they're just like, you know, they're like adults. Very strange, you know what I mean? They always seem to be in the same mood. It's a fairly good one. They're always helping people. You know, they're not running, they go to meetings because they know they have to be at meetings, but they're not at meetings because they need the meeting. They're at meetings, essentially, it seems, because they're trying to help other people. You know, it's a different type of critter, you know what I mean? And you sort of look like that, and sometimes if you get a sponsor like that, you're hanging around that, you decide you want what they have, you don't even know what they have, And then you're ready to do the steps and follow those critters around. You know what I'm talking about? So here's what happens. What happens is this, and they talk about it in the book, and we've talked about it before. And I noticed right here in 191, it says right here in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, he says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program. Now, this is written like in 19, this is, he's talking about something that happened to him in like 1937, you know what I mean, or something like that. This is Bill Dotson, the guy on the bed, the man on the bed. Somewhere around here, there's the man on the bed. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. This is what he says. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seem to have such a release. I mean, he was sober. He says, I noticed that others seem to have such a release, a happiness, or something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, here's a guy who is sober, just like I was sober, and he's in an AA room, and he realizes that he's sober, but he's crazy. That he's sober, but there's still a problem. There's still issues. There's something, there's an itch, there's a problem. And he notices that there are some people that have some sort of release, some sort of happiness, have something. And I noticed that. I would follow these guys around. Eddie Edwards, Joe Snyder, Ray O'Keefe. I knew who they were. I would follow, they were doing a step series. I would go to their step, I would follow these guys around because I didn't know what they had or how to get it. I thought maybe through osmosis. If I sat there, maybe like it would like slough over me. It's like a virus or something. Who knows? I would get it, and I just sort of follow them around, you know? And that's the deal. And he's talking about the same deal. And which really, when you think of it, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to anywhere to get it, part of this deal, if you see it, is to have a desire to have something that you see in somebody else. I mean, if you don't have the desire to have what you see in somebody else, you're not even ready to take these steps. You know, you're not even ready because you don't have any vision. There's no vision for you. There's no vision as to where you want to be and what you want to do. So you don't want what we have. You want what you had. You want the penthouse. You want to get laid every week. And you want to go to the football games. That's what you want. And you'll get that. Let me tell you something, you can stay sober long enough, you can go ahead and get that stuff, and then you'll wonder why you drink again or you feel lousy, because you're not getting what's available in this program, what's really available in this program. The rocket ship in the fourth dimension of existence, the experience of heaven. So this guy says it's hard for me, that he's talking about the stuff that I experienced all this stuff. I know it's true. Listen, this is our basic tech. Either it's true or it's a total lie. Either they're telling us the truth. It says, you know, in the book it says you can believe what they say about themselves absolutely. Either they're telling us their personal testimony, which is true. Now, I know it's true. The reason I know it's true is because it happened to me. I've experienced it. So I know that there's concrete underneath those lily pads. This isn't bullshit. I know this is true because it's happened to me. So I understand what he's talking about. And it happened to me just like it happened to him, okay? So the bottom line is he's talking about this deal. He's looking at this deal, and this is what he says. At the end of this, he says, I knew there was even more, something I had to got. I'm getting a little step 3 stuff now, and I'm going to tie it into step 10 in a second. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. Now, this guy's, you understand what the story is? This guy's watching Bill like a hawk. Bill's got something going on. It's like extraterrestrial. It's supernatural. You know what I mean? This guy's got something going, you know? How does this guy, have anybody read Bill's story? How does he turn into the drunk he was in to the guy he became writing all this stuff and all this stuff with Dr. How does that happen? You really think that has something to do with Bill Wilson? I mean, think about it. Have you read his story? You ought to read his story. You think that what he turned into had anything to do with him? You think it's because he's like smart or something like that? He talks about what happened when he was smart and he was bright and what was going on. He was taking money out of his wife's pocketbook, you know? He was a loser. How does a loser like that turn into the man he turned into? How does Dr. Bob turn the man he turned into? He sent it right in the book. So this guy's watching this guy. He's watching, just like I watched Joe Snyder. He's saying, what's the deal? He says, I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, you know the problem with the big book? It's actually not a problem, I'm just telling you a fact of life. Everything in the big book is absolutely clear. It's absolutely clear, but for alcoholics, it's hidden in plain sight. They'll say something that's absolutely clear, but if you're an alcoholic and you're not ready for this, thank you very much, what happens is you don't see it. You don't want to see it. It's like me when my wife said, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I drive 3 blocks away. I stop the red light. I said, what the hell does she mean by that? Alcoholics do that. Guys with degrees, National Science Foundation fellow, Department of Laws of Mathematics. Their wives tell them, you come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. They drive 3 blocks down the road and say, what's that all about? They don't understand what it's about is you're drinking too much and it's a problem. They don't see that. So you may read this book 50 times. You may read this book 100 times. If you don't see what they're saying, what good does it do? If you want to remain exactly the way you are and you don't realize you're dishonest enough and delusional enough to think that you're okay when you're crazy, but you're just not drinking, and you don't want more than this, and you don't realize this more, what does it matter how many times you read it if you don't see it and if you don't want it? And this is what this guy says. He says, Bill was at my, he says, and I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. Now there must be a reason why he's relating the story, and there is a reason, because this was the absolute turning point in this guy's life. And if you read all the stories, and if you read the big book, this is the turning point in anybody's life when they become the men that they talk about in the sixth step. What's the man in the sixth step? What is the test for the man? Any man who works this step enough so he wants to grow in the image and likeness of the Creator, you know, who tries this repeatedly his entire life so he can grow, is truly a man who's trying to grow in the image and likeness of the Creator. It's all about God. It's all about God. That's the step that separates the men from the boys. That's the step that decides who's going to be in the fellowship of the Spirit. It's the men who are focused on being like their Creator to try to grow a character so they can be like that deal. So here it is. It says, I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release they seemed to have. You understand? Now here's the deal. Now listen, I'm going to hand this to you. You can do with it whatever you want. You can forget it. You can say it's bullshit. It don't matter to me. Okay? I'm just going to give you the gift, okay? Which really isn't original to me. I'm just going to read you something from the book. This guy is saying, what's the secret? You understand what he's saying? So how many people here would like to know the secret? Okay, how many people would not like to know the secret? Okay. So you all would like to know the secret, okay? This is what he says. He says, we were eating lunch and I was listening, trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. See, he's listening. He's trying to figure out the secret. You go around, you go to psychiatrists. You pop pills. You read self-help books. You spend your entire life trying to figure out what your problem is and what the secret is. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, this guy says, it's throughout the book, but this guy claims that I'm trying to figure out the secret. What's the deal here? You know what I mean? So that I can be on the rocket ship ride. You understand what I'm saying? He says, I was trying to find the secret. I was listening. And then he says this. Bill looked across at, like you're doing. He was doing the same thing you're doing. You're waiting for me to tell you the secret. That's what he was doing. He was doing this deal. You know, Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, now this is what he said. Here's the quote. You don't like it, you have to write New York, tell him to take it out of the book. Here's the quote. Henrietta, the Lord, that's a capital L, you know, I mean, I know it's a Christian thing, it's probably talking about Jesus or somebody, but you can put in God, whatever. He says, it's clearly not the doorknob or, you know, like the couch potato or the group, whatever it is. He says, some deity. It says, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease. By the way, he's talking about the disease you have. That I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. Did you hear that? Did you get that? Now, in case you missed it, Bill Dodson actually says what that meant to him. He says, I think I have the answer. He says he found the answer. By the way, he stayed home forever after that, and he changed into one of those men. He says, I think I have the answer. Would you all like to know the answer?
Yes.
That's three people want to know the answer?
Yes.
Pathetic. I think I had the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God, just in case you didn't know what the Lord meant, God, not higher power, God, the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling other people about it, is a sort of golden text of the AIDS program for me. He was so excited about God curing his disease, he got to go out there and tell everybody else, okay? Now, if you don't feel that way, you're just not going to get this deal. That doesn't mean you're not going to stay sober. You understand? It doesn't mean you can't go to meetings. It doesn't mean we're going to kick out of AA, because the only requirement for AA is a desire to stay sober. You know, that's how it's designed to stay sober. We got a lot of guys in here that have 15, 20 years, and they're thumb-sucking crybabies, and they talk about other people behind their back, you know, and they can't keep a marriage together or a relationship together, and they got all sorts of problems, and they're whining at meetings, or they're putting down people or something, they hate people, whatever. We got a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are not emotionally sober. They haven't hit that next frontier that Bill Wilson. We got a lot of people in alcohol. We got most people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't hit that deal that Bill Wilson hit. But I'm saying that this isn't your deal, because this was Bill Wilson. This is the program that Bill Wilson worked. This is the program that this guy worked that he noticed. It's right in the book. They wouldn't have put it in there if it wasn't important. If you don't have that deal, then you know what that means? It means you just don't have that deal. You'd have to hate me for saying that. It's just the truth. You want to hate the truth. You know, I'm just a messenger guy. You know, you just don't have it. But now what's he saying? Now this is, why does this have anything to do with the 10th step? Why does the God thing have anything to do with the 10th step? You know, when I used to do the 10th step, when I first came in and I was doing the 10th step, you know what I would talk about? And there was nothing wrong with this. Your story changes depending upon your experience, you know? And when I first came in, my experience with the steps is like your experience, many of your experiences, it was mechanical. I did what I was told to do. I wrote down the 4th step. I did the 10th step. I did the 5th step. So I would explain it in a mechanical fashion. This is how I did the 10th step. This is what the 10th step means to me. But as I explained it, and there's nothing wrong with explaining it, and people get a lot out of explaining it. Sometimes they need to explain it. Even though what happened is I never really saw the connection between the 3rd step and the 10th step. I never, even though they say things like this is the basis of freedom, of the arch of freedom that we walk through, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happened, even though I knew it was a big deal and they're always talking about God, I never saw, quite frankly, how the 3rd step played into the 10th step. It almost looked like it was really a psychological program, not really a God program. You just sort of like, you know, do the next right thing, you know, and always be good and apologize and everything, but what does that have to do with God, which is all the way back here on the 3rd step, you know? And I'm gonna leave, that's a bookmark. Bookmark that, because I'm going to get back to that, how it comes to the 3rd step. If you look over here on step 3 in the book, there is a how it works. You know, there's a lot of promises in this book. There's a lot of promises in this book. There's more than just the promises. We're not going to know a new freedom and a new habit. We're going to know a new freedom and a new... Now, you know what that means? It means that you're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. It's going to be new. You're going to know a new freedom. Here's what it says. You know how you're going to know that? If you're painstaking. See, a lot of people don't see that. They say, how come I'm not the yogi? He says, they don't see where it's like if you really have seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed ours, not to follow the steps, thoroughly followed. They don't see that. They do their own program. Well, this is my program. This is your thoroughly follow this. It doesn't say just follow the steps to do this. It says thoroughly followed our path, whatever that means. You know what it says? It says you're going to realize the promises if you're painstaking, operative word pain, painstaking about, then you're going to realize the promises. But there's more than just those promises. You know, no matter how far down the ladder, back here on the 3rd step, they have similar things. It says all through the book it talks about the promises. Let me read this to you. And what it says, if you're painstaking, you're going to know a new freedom. You know what that means? Does that mean you have the new freedom now? It means you're going to know a new freedom. Going to know. It means sometime in the future, if you do this, you're going, What does that mean sometime in the future? No, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, listen, I'm an alcoholic. You know how I fix myself? This is how I fix myself. I'm feeling crappy. I'm feeling lousy. I'm feeling upset. I need a fucking drink. You know, I go like this, whack, whack, I'm okay. I pop a pill, black, black, I'm okay. I smoke a joint, bam, I'm okay. Snort some coke, I'm okay. You know, the way I fix myself takes exactly 5 seconds. When I go to the doctor and they say, I feel sorry, I want the prescription, I want him to say something, I want the psychiatrist, I want to feel better immediately. I want to go up there so I feel better immediately. I want immediate relief. I don't want to suffer, I don't want to go through pain or anything like that. You understand? That's an old idea. You know what I know the universe is wrong? When I'm suffering and I don't feel good and nothing fixes me immediately. You understand? Because I've got to feel good all the time because my feelings are so important, because nothing's more important than my feelings. You know, that's the most important thing in the world. You know, and if I can't feel good, I'll just go to an AA meeting and I'll talk about my feelings and, you know, who's bothering me and stuff like that. And never get past having bad feelings. Never grow up. Never become an adult. So here's the deal. It says here, when we sincerely took such a position, the position of trusting in God, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. They're talking about the third step. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. It's all about focusing on him and his work, okay? Now, here's what happens. Established on that footing, if you painstakingly establish on that footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. You stop worrying about your feelings. You start being concerned about other people. How about that? What's this? Does anybody have a burning desire shit? You know what I mean? I mean, don't you want to hear that at the end of a decent AA meeting? Anybody have a burning desire? Yeah, my mother, you know, I'm going to kill, you know, I don't know who made that stuff up, but, no, how about instead of, does anybody have a burning desire? You know, how about talking about what the program's about? What this deal is about? Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, and little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully. We became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. Who doesn't want that? Losing fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. Losing fear. Losing anxiety. Losing worry about anything. We thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could last, abandon ourselves to him. Who's him? Him's the Lord. Him's God. Him's what Bill Wilson was talking about. So here's the deal. Here's the deal. You come into Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I just want to point out one thing in what this says. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. We became. In other words, we became. You know, we're going to know. Somewhere in the future, something that we started realizing these promises. You get it? Okay, so you come into Alcoholics Anonymous because you finally get rid of that old idea that you can drink and you don't have a drinking problem. So you say, you put the plug in the jug, right? You're right here. Right here where my arm is, right here. You come in on step one, you're powerless over alcohol, your life has become unmanageable, right? Okay? Somewhere in the future, if you do this thing right in a painstaking way, what happens? You're here. You're here. You lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter, you're reborn. You have a new freedom, a new happiness. You're here. You understand what I'm saying? You get it? You see how my arms are? That's you're here. You start up here, you do all these things, you're here, okay? Now you ready for it? You're here. And once you get here, what happens is, if you read the book, if you talk to some of these people, what happens is, you're rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, you've experienced much of heaven, all these promises are happening to you on a pretty much permanent basis. What do you think of that deal? Do you think that's untrue? I'm telling you, it's not untrue. It's not untrue. You change. You change. You go through the psychic change and it happens. So over here, you get rid of the alcohol. Over here, and I'm not saying you get perfect, okay? We all have, I'm growing, we're all growing, but you get to the point, we're on, not a once, I know when you first start experiencing promises, you know, you experience promises, it's great until the next day. You know what I mean? I get it. They come, they go, they fade, they're in and out. But there comes a time, if you're painstaking, where they start working permanently in your life. As a matter of fact, you feel so good. You're like Bill Wilson. The Lord has been so wonderful to me. Sherman said that I'm so grateful. I'm like deep. You got that new freedom, that new happiness that's daily. It doesn't matter, broke or not broke, you know, cancer or not cancer. It's like a happening deal. You may not believe it because it hasn't happened to you, but here's the deal. Here you stop drinking. Over here, you're rocking in the fourth dimension. Get it? Now here's the deal. Here's what you got to say. Between here and here, between my left hand and my right hand, there's time. There's this area. There's the area in between, which is where, and I'm not putting you that, where most of you are at right now. The area in between is not here. It's not the rocket in the fourth dimension. It's not the drinking. It's in between. How does in between feel for you? You see? So you're just experiencing in between. There's in between things. So what does this have to do? And I'm gonna just try to tie this into the 10th step. Why is the God thing so important? Why is it so important for the 10th step? What does the 10th step say? What is the 10th step really about? It says, continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, probably admitted. Is it about personal inventory? Well, maybe you could say it is, but the personal inventory they talk about is the one we continue to take. It's the one that we talk about in the fourth step. Is it about properly admitted? Well, we learned about that in the eighth and ninth step. What's the one thing that is brought into the tenth step that's different? You know, because it just says continue to do the stuff that we've already learned. What's the one thing that's different? What's the underlying principle of the 10th step? You ever go to a meeting and some guy says, who was drinking, comes back and he says, I'm here to pick up a white chip? You ever hear somebody pick up a white chip after they've been sober for a while?
Yeah.
And they ask, and you know what he says? He says something like this. He says, well, you know, I had 5 years, I was doing good, and then I stopped going to meetings. You ever hear that?
Yeah.
And then I stopped talking to my sponsor.
Yeah.
And then I stopped doing this, and then I stopped doing that. You understand what I'm saying? You know that deal? I stopped. They didn't what?
Continue.
They didn't continue. So here's the deal. You ask yourself. Now here's what you say. You say, well, no problem. I just will never stop continuing. Right? That's what you say. You say this. How could somebody do that? That's crazy. I'm never going to stop continuing, right? That's what you say as an alcoholic because you're powerful, because you've got power, because you do that. I'm never going to drink it. I'm never going to stop continuing. And what you don't realize is that banana who just said he stopped continuing 5 years before was sitting at a meeting hearing another guy pick up a white chip, and he was saying, I'm never going to stop continuing. What you don't understand is everybody who stops continuing told themselves sincerely, I'll never stop continuing. And he stopped continuing.
Yep.
So why do some people drink and not continue and some people don't? Now here's the deal. You want a simple answer. Now I've got a simple answer for you, but you don't want the answer I'm going to give you, okay? I'm going to give you the answer, what I see. Here's what you think, and you latch onto this. It's an AA, it's sort of like an AA phrase. Well, people drink because, you ever hear this? People drink because they stop going to meetings?
Yeah. Yep.
You would like to believe that, because then the power is in your hands. All you have to do is keep on going to meetings and you won't drink. So here's the question I have to ask you. Why do people stop going to meetings? You see, it's easy to say people drink and stop going to meetings. You say, well, I'll never stop going to meetings, but you're not getting to the underlying problem. Why do some people stop going to meetings and stop doing these things and other people don't stop going to meetings? See, that's what you don't know. That's what I do know. I get that deal. I understand. I understand the way they understand it. If the secret is in Bill Wilson's statement. Because of this, you see, if you're going to meetings because you don't want, not wanting to drink after 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, it's like doing time. It'll only keep you, you know, what is that? Just say no. Just say no. Doing that jail time deal. You know, after you get the car, after you get the wife, after you get the husband, after you get the guy, after all the bills come, after the problems come, just say no is going to keep you going to meetings for just so long. until the good stuff happens, the bad stuff happens, all the crap out there that all of a sudden the virtue from going on in here, it'll only keep you here for a certain amount of time. But here's what Bill Wilson said. Bill Wilson said, "The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease. I got to keep talking about it and telling other people." In other words, what he was saying is, he says, "I'm so grateful, and I'm so focused on God, and I believe that He's done this." As a matter of fact, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 said, he said, "I realize this is the answer." He, everything that Bill Wilson had, he gave credit to God, and he's so grateful. Bill Wilson was he had a compulsion. Okay, any alcoholic here should understand the word compulsion. You ever say to yourself, "I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink today," and then you wind up drunk anyway? Bill Wilson had a godly compulsion. He had a faith in God. He was grateful to God. He tied in. He did the third step. He lived the third step. As did Dr. Bob. He believed everything he had. Everything flowed from God. He was grateful to God, and he felt compelled to come here and share it with other people. It wasn't about, "I'm not going to drink today." It wasn't about white knuckling. It wasn't, "I'll go to a meeting so I don't drink today," or "I'm scared of drinking." You understand what I'm saying? What it was is, he never lost the gratitude and the understanding that everything he had came from God. You know what he did? He utterly turned himself over to God. He turned his will and his life over to God. He believed all this stuff in the big book. You know what I mean? He just looked at his will and what he would have me do. And again, and he believed God was the central point. You know what it was? It was, what does it say in the Great Fact? Is this not, God became the central point of his life. All he thought about was God. And because he thought about God, because he had the faith in God, coming to meetings and doing this stuff was a compulsion. You know, for some people, listen, every man in here knows what it's like as far as to have that sexual compulsion. Let me tell you something. I went to those bars every Saturday and Friday night. Man, I know all about that, you know. I wanted what she had, and I was going to go to any length to get it. Trust me. You know what I mean? I know what it is to have that compulsion, okay? That compulsion will get you drunk. The compulsion for money will get you drunk. The compulsion for sex, the compulsion to get closer to God and to focus on God will keep you sober for 30 or 40 years.
Yep.
And rock you in the fourth dimension of existence.
Yep.
And that's how the third step, and the faith in the third step, ties into the continuation. None of these steps mean crap if all of a sudden you stop doing it because you've been sober for a while and you think you're okay, and all of a sudden you're focusing on this and focusing on that, and you don't have time yet. Because this world will wrap you up in its finger and point you in a different direction. There's a lot. Just turn on TV. They're not talking about going to AA meetings. It'll take you away. And actually, the more sober you are, and the longer you're sober, the more excuses you have, like, "I'm okay." You know what the guys say who drink? They say, "What are you talking to me about? I'm not drinking. I don't even feel like drinking." Sometimes you don't feel like drinking until you've had your first drink. You don't even realize you feel like drinking. But the guys that have the faith, and all of a sudden they're not doing this for anything else except because they're grateful to God, because they have the faith and they're looking at God, you know, some, they don't stop going to meetings. You know why? Because they're grateful. Because what they do is they wake up in the morning and say, "Thank you, God. Thank you, Lord." They're looking for people to help. Because that's what their job is, to stay close to him and to do it. That's what their focus is. That's what their deal is. And that's why there's such a connection. There's such a stream of connection between that and finally landing you on the 11th step. That's why the 11th step is number 11, the last thing on the book. And then after you get the 11th step where you're trying to get more and more faith, then you get the 12th step, which you're doing what? Telling other people, doing what I'm doing right now. This is what I'm doing. I'm telling you what the deal is. Is everybody going to do it? No. Some people are going to say, "Well, that's a bunch of crap." You know, that's cool. That's fine. That's okay. I'm just doing my deal. I'm just exposing what works for me. What I believe, the big book, you read it yourself. Maybe you missed that. You read the big book yourself. I think it's what they were talking about in here. I think it's what Bill was talking about and what Bob was talking about. I don't really give a crap whether you think it's religious, whether it's holier than thou. I really don't give a crap. It doesn't matter. If you think I'm religious, holier than thou, then you ought to read what Dr. Bob says. He says if you're an atheist, agnostic, I have some other form of intellectual pride that keeps you from this, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. You know, so if I'm in that camp of being holier than thou and righteous and religious, I'm right there with Bill Wilson and Bob Smith, who wrote this deal, our founders, because that's what this book is all about. There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Thank you very much.